Chapter 17. When Chiku announced her intention to Ching to the moon, Imris Kwame was extremely ambivalent at first, warning that no communications were entirely immune from Arachne's eavesdropping. "But we won't be talking about her for once," Chiku said. Kwame had some inkling by then of what this conversation was going to entail.
"But if you start discussing Chibesa physics, that will hardly sound like a normal, everyday conversation."
"You don't know my mother."
"I will see what I can do.
We have some reserved quangle paths for occasions when we need maximum privacy. I cannot guarantee that Arachne will not intercept them, but they are much better than the normal level of civilian encryption."
"I'll take what you've got, Imris, and believe me, it's not going to be a long call."
In the late months of 2365, Earth and Saturn were in opposition to each other. Chiku had seen the lit face of Earth almost all the way in. First a pale blue star, then a dot, then a circle blemished with white and green. The circle gained a bright silver coin of a companion. The moon did not look grey at all until they were much closer. Even then, it was a grey of many colours, splendidly variegated: fawn grey, nickel grey, ochre grey. A chain of lights wrapped the moon in low orbit, and there were more lights scattered across the night side. Synaptic nets of them, cities and roads and spaceports. So much light that from space the moon looked friendlier and more inviting than Earth ever did. The zones of special historic significance, the landing sites and early moon bases, were dark puddles of vanishing regolith. Uncle Jeffrey had once told Chiku how he went out into the African night, somewhere near the household, and instructed the Org to overlay the moon with territorial markers and transnational boundaries, the proud colours of the great space-faring powers. A lovely thing to behold in one sense, because the colonised moon spoke of international cooperation, of differences being settled by negotiation and the rule of interplanetary law, rather than the tank and the machete. But now, Chiku did not need the Org to see the moon, chopped up and pacified beneath a scurf of cities. The trick now was to have the Org strip all that away and paste a ghost moon over the real. When Gulliver was 30 light seconds from Earth, Chiku placed a Ching request with Jitendra Gupta. He could have declined it. There was at least a 1 in 3 chance that he would be asleep or otherwise engaged, but the acceptance came through only a minute later. And then she was there, standing next to him, in a cave on the moon. Jitendra was as tall and skinny as ever, slightly stooped now, except when he was consciously correcting his posture. His scalp shaven or bald, she had never been quite sure which, but had never known him with hair. A broad smile and an easy, affable manner that she knew belied the considerable emotional strain he had been under these past few years. He was an old man. It was not fair on Jitendra, what Sunday had put him through. Not at all.
"It's good to see you, Father. I'm sorry it's been a while."
"It's all right, Chiku. You've been busy, and we knew you were well."
"I should still have called, but I figured that if there was any change in Mother,
you'd have been the first to hear about it. You're right, of course. And no, there hasn't really been any change."
He smiled, papering over years of sadness as if it was no great thing.
"She'll come back to us one day, Chiku. I'm sure of it."
Jitendra clapped his hands.
"And how are you? In space, I see. On a ship, no less. Are you traveling alone? Or with...
Pedro, yes. He's with me.
He seems to be a good man. I liked him when we spoke. You should both come to the moon one of these days. Or perhaps you are on your way this very moment."
Not this time, I'm afraid, she said. We are in a bit of a rush to get back to Earth, and I've been away a while.
You can't argue with genetics. Wanderlust is in your blood. That's where your mother and I were never on quite the same page. Sander wanted to see everything, to drink in every possible human experience. I was quite content with my little microcosm here on the moon.
They were in the underground domicile, Sunday and Jitendra's home beneath the lunar soil. They had moved out of their dwelling in the former de-scrutinized zone years ago, when the property magnates arrived and pushed the rental market into absurdity. Now they lived in a small community somewhere near the northern flank of the Rima Ariadeus Rift Valley, part of a small hamlet of linked houses and modest recreational spaces that was home to about 50 families. It was an isolated little place, 2 hours' drive from the nearest rail hub, 6 hours' travel from the nearest community of any consequence. But they liked it here. For Sunday it had offered escape from the pressures attendant on any Akinya, certainly one who in the scheme of things was something of a modern-day celebrity. For Jitendra, it offered everything he needed from life. Peace, calm, and the space to play with his toy robots and automata, in which he had found a universe of quiet fascination. They had been here for a century, though in all that time, Chiku doubted she had visited in person more than 3 times. Her record of chinging in was scarcely any better. As her mother had retreated further and further into her mathematics, so Chiku's calls had become less and less frequent. This had caused Jitendra no small measure of pain, but the truth was that Sunday appeared to neither know nor care that her daughter was staying away, and that indifference only made Chiku even less inclined to visit. But here she was, chinging in from a fast-moving spaceship with a head full of worries, and still, it was good to see her father again.
"Come through to the living room," Jitendra suggested, beckoning her to follow him as he stooped through one of the low connecting doors. "I spoke to your mother only a few days ago, by the way."
"She came out?"
"She came out. A window of lucidity. It lasted a good couple of hours. We spoke of many things, you, of course, and your friend Pedro and Jeffrey. She always needs to be reminded that Jeffrey isn't with us now. It's not that her memory is poor, just that she doesn't attach much importance to these things when she's in there, deep down."
"How could she forget her own brother was dead?" Chiku said. But she was careful not to phrase it as a criticism.
"Would you like tea?"
She was wearing a robot body, so it was entirely possible to take Jitendra up on his offer, but she declined.
"I can't really stay long, Father. We're using a very high level of Quangle, and the longer we spend in conversation, the better chance someone has of breaking the encryption." "That sounds very mysterious."
"Oh, it's nothing to worry about. And it's not as if you haven't had your share of adventures, is it?"
"We had our moments. Although that sort of thing was always your mother's forte, more than mine. That said, she did nearly get the both of us killed, on Mars."
They were in the living room now, a kettle-shaped chamber with branching rooms. The walls were compacted soil, fused with plastic to a hard, pearly grey. There were no windows or skylights. They were too far underground for that, but honeycomb panels in the walls were cycling softly through a succession of real-time lunar views, dayside, nightside, and terminator. Now and then, one of the panels would show some part of Africa. Chiku made out the tinkling glissades of Kora music, probably some dusty old recording. The place had a particular smell, some lavender fragrance, that brought with it the happy associations of childhood. "I've brought something with me," she said, while Jitendra prepared himself some tea. A pair of mechanical soldiers with clock keys turning in their backs stomped around his feet. "I need you to show it to Mother," The next time she's lucid.
That might be a little while.
You said it was only a few days since the last one.
A few. Maybe a couple of weeks, now that I think about it.
He scratched at his scalp.
I'm not terribly good with time.
None of us is. But this is rather important, Father. If you could get it to her, even if it means forcing her out of it. You can do that sometimes, can't you?
I can try,
he said, without much enthusiasm.
I'm really sorry she's putting you through all this.
It's not right.
I loved her mind, Chiku. I still do. It is only right and proper that I allow her mind to go where it wishes. Now, what do you have for her?
Chiku spread her hands, framing a square. Via the quangled bind, she had brought with her the symbols from Winter Queen. They crammed together on the pane, neon bright. She passed the intangible object to Jitendra.
Some context might be helpful,
Jitendra said, taking the pane from her as if it was real.
It's Chibesa syntax, obviously,
she said, as Jitendra turned the pane around to look through it from the other side.
I'm sure you recognize the mathematics. It would be difficult not to, when your wife's made it her life's commitment.
He was squinting through the pane now, holding it up against the glow from one of the wall panels as it cycled through the orange blush of a Serengeti sunset.
You think she will find some amusement in this?
I think there might be more to it than that.
These symbols, assuming I haven't been lied to, came from Eunice's ship, the one she took out of the solar system before Mother was even born. Were I examining what purported to be a Ming vase, I might demand some provenance at this point.
I can't prove any of it, but if I told you, the symbols were shown to me by Arethusa. That would carry some weight, wouldn't it?
I suppose so,
Jitendra said doubtfully.
But then, I'd probably want proof that you'd spoken to Arethusa.
There are reasons why I can't say as much as I'd like, at least not right now. But I've taken a chance in opening this bind, and I wouldn't have done that just to waste your time. Chiku hesitated, wondering how much she dared disclose. She had to keep reminding herself that she was not talking to Jitendra, but to Jitendra's time-shifted simulation, a full 60 seconds downstream. The real Jitendra would already have begun to catch up with the start of the conversation by now, and the simulation's responses would be adjusted in accordance with his real-time reactions as the dialogue proceeded. But this was not Jitendra. I've run some simple checks on that syntax, she hedged. It's different. It appears to fit the rules, but the arguments spiral off in unusual directions. It's as if there's a way to build new logical structures that were always there, always implied by the old mathematics, but we just didn't see them.
But whoever scribbled down these symbols could see them.
I wonder what Mother will make of them.
I need to know Jitendra. Right now, this is the most important thing in my life. But do you have the mathematics? If it's something new, take it to the experts.
I can't do that. For a start, it's not complete. These aren't fully formed statements, just the outlines of statements that haven't been properly formulated yet. Secondly, I'm not in a position to trust anyone I don't know. If it's all right with you, I'd prefer to keep this in the family.
If I didn't know you better, I might have grave concerns for your mental health. You have been visiting a neuropractor regularly, yes?
I have, and I also brush my teeth 3 times a day.
Then you have allayed my concerns.
Jitendra walked around the living room with the pain, as if he was looking for a spot to hang it.
If the syntax points to post-Chibeza physics, Chiku said, a sudden tightness in her throat, the holoships need that information.
And you would be the one to disseminate it?
You of all people know who and what I am, Father. I can't let Zanzibar down.
No promises, Chiku. You should know that by now.
But you will show her.
I'll do my best. But you shouldn't count on getting any answer. She would need to understand your urgency, and that is not something I can communicate to her.
Jitendra looked away sharply, as if there was something in his face he did not care for her to see.
On her best days, then she's back with us. It's as if she never left. But those days are rarer than they used to be. The mathematics has her in its coils, Chiku. I worry that there will come a time when she never surfaces again, and remains lost in her mind.
A sing-song tone entered his voice.
Caverns measureless to man, down to a sunless sea.
You sounded so optimistic when we started.
I try, but it's not always easy.
He rested the pain on a shelf. The object would be totally invisible to anyone who happened to visit, or ching into their home, unless Jitendra willed them permission to see it. And even then, 99 out of 100 visitors would not have the slightest clue what those scratchy, faintly anthropomorphic symbols actually signified. Chiku knew she could trust him with it.
I'd like to see her before I go.
Are you sure? I seem to recall it upset you the last time. No one would think the worse of you if you left now.
I would, Chiku said.
I don't need to tell you where she is.
Jitendra stood aside, and she entered the adjoining bedroom, where her mother now spent almost every hour of her life. It was like visiting someone in hospital, someone with an acute physical ailment. In fact, there was nothing much wrong with Sunday Akinya. Nothing beyond what would be expected after almost 240 years of existence. She was on a bed, lying flat except for her upper body and head, which were raised slightly by pillows. Her eyes were closed. She wore light silk clothes with a sheet of similar material draped over her. Her arms were at her sides, resting on top of the sheet. She was staring up at the ceiling, her eyes closed. Lines ran into her arms. A simple household medic stood in attendance, its head tilted to the floor while it waited for something to do.
The machines look after her very well,
Jitendra said, speaking softly behind Chiku.
Really, though, there isn't much that needs doing. They move her sometimes to prevent bed sores. They maintain her muscle tone and bone density. They adjust her drips and catheters. They alert me if there's a change in her state of consciousness.
Can I be alone with her for a moment, Father?
Of course, Chiku.
He retreated. She heard the whir of some clockwork thing being wound up, like an insect repeating the same idiot sound. Chiku moved to Sunday's bedside. She thought of the frozen form of Eunice, the body she could not touch. This time, she allowed her robot hand to settle onto Sunday's brow. It was warm, furious with calculation. It was pointless being angry with her mother. She had not gone looking for this obsession. It had found her, ambushed her. Like Jitendra said, it had caught her in its coils. But she could do something. She could struggle, fight her way back to sanity. Why didn't she? I've given something to Jitendra, Chiku said. I want you to look at it. I know you can hear me. It's connected to this quest of yours anyway, so I doubt you'll need much persuasion. I want to know what you think of it. I think it's really important. Maybe you can make some sense of it. But you can only talk to Jitendra about it. Promise me that, won't you? Not that she needed a promise. The miracle was Sunday Akinya speaking to anyone. Of course Jitendra would be the first to hear if she had something to say. I can't stay, Chiku said, withdrawing her hand. I've got myself into some kind of trouble. It's bigger than me, maybe bigger than the family. In a day or so, I'm going to be back on Earth, going back to Africa. Wish me well, won't you? Sunday stirred. Her lips moved. Her eyelids fluttered. Then, she was back to her repose. As she took her leave of Jitendra, Chiku said, I think she heard me. He smiled at her, said, That's nice. And she understood that while he might have believed what she said, he did not for a moment think that she had had the least effect on Sunday.